Welcome to Wednesday's programme. It's El Scorchio Tremendo on the Costa del Salford again. 22 degrees this afternoon. Not a cloud in the sky. Neil Scommel Suspair. There you go. There's a bit of Gaeilge for you. How are you? Have you had a good Wednesday? Are you basking in the sunshine? Well, you made it here, didn't you? That's good. Not too bad at all. Let's get on with the programme.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, indeed. Gerald Celente, the legendary publisher of the Trends Journal, will be with me in the second hour live from Kingston in New York City. Top man is Gerald. Kingston, New York, I should say, not New York City. Trendsresearch.com, always read the journal. Can't wait for that. Coming up before then, I'll be joined by Stephen Lendeman from the Windy City of Chicago, another one of my favourite guests. Great journalist, StephenLendeman.org. Check that out. So, well, that should keep you happy for a Wednesday. Yes, I wasn't tempted. Questions on social media. Did you think about having the afternoon? No, I didn't think about having the afternoon off. Hot or not, couldn't justify it. I've got a bank holiday on Monday. This Monday I'll be off, and the week after that I'll have a week off, so I'll rest and recuperate then. Now it's time for work. That's the way it goes. Alrighty. Now, the AstraZeneca jab is dangerous, and it's undoubtedly killing people. I don't know how many people it's killing, but I know that it is killing people. I can say that in good conscience, with no fear of contradiction by anybody, regardless of where they work or who they work for. Now, you'll know by now that Germany has again pulled the use of this vaccine, made in conjunction with Oxford University. It's pulled it for people under 60. It believes, the German government believes, that a type of rare blood clot is being caused by the vaccine. They found 31 cases of it among the nearly 2.7 million people who have had the vaccine. Now, as I said on my website today, let us be clear. That phrase politicians love, that is 31 they know about. All right. Canada has taken it off the table for under 55s. And AstraZeneca is being typical. It continues to insist that the benefits of taking it far outweigh the risks. Now, this is preposterous, isn't it? When you think of the fact that the great, great, great majority of people will never get coronavirus to begin with. Of those who do, the great majority of them will either have no symptoms or mild symptoms. So it's ridiculous to say the benefits outweigh the risks. There's no benefit to the vast majority of people, and there's obviously a risk. Obviously. Now, I got into this on the programme last night, so I did, and I've published my feelings on this on the website today, richieallen.co.uk. The Freedom of Information request in Scotland, which returned information, an answer from Public Health Scotland, that up until February 20th, let me just get this right now. I don't want to make it bags of this. Up until February 26th. Remember, the vaccine rollout began shortly before Christmas. And the Scottish Health Authority says 2,200 people have died within 28 days of vaccination. Public Health England hasn't answered anybody yet. Thousands have died within 28 days of getting the vaccine. Now, as a responsible journalist who never lies and never exaggerates, I don't know that all of those people were killed by the vaccine, but some of them were. There is no doubt about it. The Norwegian doctor, top doctor, Let me get his name right so I don't make a mess of that either. The chief physician in Norway, Professor Pal Andre Holme, said that three healthcare workers who died after having the vaccine were undoubtedly killed by the vaccine. We have the reason. Nothing but the vaccine can explain why these individuals had this immune response. There is a cover-up underway, I believe. What's my evidence, or where is the evidence for saying that? Well, Matt Hancock nearly had a stroke in Westminster last week when he was asked to provide this information. The exact number of people who died within 4 weeks of having a vaccine. Didn't want to get into it. They don't want to talk about it. Like I said, Public Health England hasn't yet responded to dozens of freedom of information requests from citizens asking the same question that was asked in Scotland. You'd have to be insane to have an AstraZeneca vaccine. In my opinion, you'd have to be insane to have any of them, but my opinion is my opinion. I'm not qualified to give medical advice, and I'm not giving medical advice. I'm saying what it is that I feel or believe based on the evidence I've seen. You'd have to be crazy. Right? We'll leave that one right there. RichieAllen.co.uk. And I did share in the article, there is a screen grab of the letter returned by Public Health Scotland with the information on it. That's just AstraZeneca. I did see a guy on BBC News last week. In fact, I saw a BBC News editor, Hugh Pym, that's who it was. Hugh Pym on the BBC last week said that the clotting thing isn't confined exclusively to the AstraZeneca jab. It's happened to people who've had the Pfizer vaccine as well, which is a different type of vaccine, of course. It's an mRNA treatment. It's not a vaccine at all. I'm going to leave that one there for now and move right on, okay? This is big today. The UK no longer has a system that is rigged against people from ethnic minorities. Says who? Says the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities. It said family structure and social class had a bigger impact than race on how people's lives turned out eventually. It said children from minority ethnic communities did as well or better than white pupils, but overt racism remained, particularly online. So what did it find then, this commission? Which it was an exhaustive study. It found that children from ethnic minority communities did as well or better than white pupils in compulsory education, with black Caribbean pupils the only group to perform less well. This success in education has transformed British society over the last 50 years into one offering far greater opportunities for all. Again, this is according to the Commission's report. It also found the pay gap between all ethnic minorities and the white majority population had shrunk to 2.3% overall and was barely significant for employees under 30. Diversity, it said, has increased in professions such as law and medicine. So there is some overt racism out there, but it's not institutional. And it's mostly online, said the commission. This is the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities. Okay. Anyway, let's hear from one or two people. Here's Samir Shah, one of the members of the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities, speaking to the media today. Samir Shah, here he is. Okay. It should be playing now.
One of the surprising facts, if you look at the British Indian community as a whole, not just anecdotal, that the average median income is 16% more than the white British community. Now, if there was institutional racism running rampant all over Britain, why is that the case? There's loads of evidence. There's no doubt there are racial disparities. And we do not disagree with that. And there are pockets and areas of racial disadvantage. It affects different communities in different ways, in different places, and the solutions for those are also different. So it's these sweeping generalizations, I don't think, really get or enable us to come up with really punchy recommendations.
Right. So he was involved in the study, member of the commission, but that just won't do. People have been melting down all day long. The usual suspects who claim that racism is around every corner, that it's under every table, that it's in every room. Here's Diane Abbott, the Labour MP and former Shadow Home Secretary. She's not happy at all.
The political analysis underlying it is that institutional racism doesn't exist. And in saying that, the report actually runs clean contrary to all sorts of important reports we've seen in recent years, notably the Lammy report on the criminal justice system, even the Windrush inquiry. And so it's almost as if we as people of colour have to make the case for the fact that institutional racism exists in institutions all over again.
Diane Abbott there. Halima Begum from the Runnymede Trust is outraged, she tells LBC Radio.
I imagine that this independent commission was set up with the intent to do something right. But as soon as the commission appointed Tony Sewell and Munira Mirza, who were going to be chairing this commission, it was quite clear that that commission had no intention to do anything right for racism other than right to the script of number 10, which is to deny institutional racism exists. Now, that was a political decision to appoint them. And what we now see is decisions being taken on race relations matter that are incredibly political, driven by cultural wars, not by evidence, not by fact, and it's not a public policy issue anymore. So I remain very, very worried. And for those of us who don't work in politics, you know, we've been here since 1968. We'll still be here after political parties have moved on and they've had a stint at winning the next election. We will be here, but we're not prepared to stand by while equalities and race relations is thrown under the bus because people want to be political on our issues. So I'm fundamentally outraged that the independent commission set up to speak on the behalf of black and minority ethnic people in this country on their experience of racism. They are the ones that are now saying that institutional racism doesn't exist. There's a word for that, isn't there? Gaslighting.
Gaslighting. We'll keep that one in mind for the moment. We'll park that one to the side for the moment. Basically, if we say the country is institutionally racist, the rest of you must accept it as a fact. But there's no evidence to suggest that it is. And the study, the commission was led by black and minority people. An exhaustive study spoke to thousands of people from minority communities or minority backgrounds. And they said the commission, you will find racism, mostly online. But the UK isn't racist. Meltdown today. Because we live in a post-truth world, a post-fact world. We live in a world where people have been programmed now, programmed is probably the right word, to put feelings above facts, to put feelings above truth, above reality. And she mentioned gaslighting there. And I've written about this. If you've been with me long enough, you'll know I've written about this. At any given time of day, and I do not exaggerate here, this has been going on for years. At any given time of day, someone on television or on radio or on Twitter or on Facebook or on Instagram is putting you down and gaslighting you. You and me both, right? We're racist. We have unconscious bias. We're homophobic. We're transphobic. We're misogynistic, depending on what day it happens to be. We're not inclusive. We're hateful. We have to talk about our mental health. We've got mental health problems. We need to be more upfront in discussing them. We're anti-Semitic. We're Islamophobic. Our views are outdated. Nationalism is wrong. It never ends. It's a gaslighting agenda. That's been going on for years. It's a psychologically disturbing agenda because when you attack somebody on that level psychologically and you do it again and again and again over time, they become more malleable. They become more programmable. Tell people enough times that they're worthless, that they're stupid, that they're not with the times, that they're racist or lazy or homophobic and so on, so on, so on, and they'll believe it. They'll believe it. The truth is you're decent, you're considerate, you're loving, you're warm, you're kind-hearted, you're flawed, of course you are, so am I. But you wouldn't deliberately harm anyone, you're unique, that's who you really are. But you're getting bombarded through programming all the time, telling you that you're bad, that you're unclean, that you're not worthy. And there's huge money in this nonsense. Hope Not Hate and the Runnymede Trust, who've got a financial interest in finding racism. Kick it out in football. Crazy stuff, this. And dangerous stuff. Dangerous. Dangerous if you have young children being exposed to this, being told all the time, you know, how bad they are and how unconsciously biased they are and how flawed they are. Mad stuff. 14 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock. We'll do more on that in the coming days and weeks, I've no doubt about it. Here's some important news. Children are well protected by the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. A lot of news outlets saying that this afternoon. You'll remember me telling you, and I'm sure you read it yourself, that Pfizer began trials of its vaccine in children a few weeks ago. It began giving the vaccine to children aged between 12 and 15. It's come back, Pfizer, and it has claimed that its trials show 100% efficacy and a strong immune response in children. This is mad stuff again. Here's a BBC health correspondent, Jim Reid.
Pfizer have been trialling their vaccine on children. This is the first study results we've seen back from children. And as you'd imagine, very positive results. So 100% effective at stopping COVID in the 12 to 15 age group. They studied just over 2,000 children. Pfizer saying they hope vaccinations can begin in the United States of school-aged children just before the next school year, so in September. Interesting, because AstraZeneca have been running a similar study of adolescents in the UK to see if that's the case. Some very interesting ethical issues here, because, of course, children aren't particularly affected by COVID. So the reason to vaccinate children wouldn't really be to protect children from the disease.
It's transmission,
exactly, yeah. Right. It's to stop it in the general community. So we'll have to come to a decision as a society, really, about whether that's something we want and we need to do.
Incredibly evil, isn't it? Children are unaffected by it. We wouldn't be injecting this toxic tidal wave of shit into children for their benefit, but for their grannies and granddads. Eh? Wow. Is there any stopping this, is there? You know, I love the BBC headline, Children Well Protected by Pfizer Vaccine. I would say children are better protected by their immune systems, because they're not going to get coronavirus, whatever it is. They're not going to get it. And even if they do, they won't even know it. Eh? Jim Reid there, BBC. And according to Sky News this afternoon, most Britons support the idea of vaccine passports. Surprise, surprise. A new poll says 62% of those surveyed said they would be fine with using a vaccine passport to get into a restaurant or a pub. And as you know, right now, Michael Gove, squirrely little Michael Gove, is studying whether or not the government can bring in vaccine passports. He's expected to publish his review in the next couple of weeks. Right? Whether or not we can implement vaccine passports to allow you into venues. The passport would tell a potential venue or a restaurant or pub whether or not you were vaccinated or you had a negative COVID test or whether you have antibodies, blah, blah, blah. Crazy. This poll, by the way, was done by Ipsos Mori. It polled 8,300 people aged over 16. 78% of them were in favour of vaccine passports to travel abroad or to visit a relative living in a care home, dropped to 62% when it came to pubs and restaurants. Yeah. Uproar today. It's coming up for 19 minutes past five. It's me, the BBG, live from Salford, sweltering Salford, by the way. Not going to last, don't get excited. Don't get excited till never last, because it's the northwest of the UK. So enjoy it while you have it. Uproar in the press today, over the scenes, in the parks, Hyde Park in Leeds yesterday. People went out, apparently people went out in the sunshine. What were they thinking, you know? I mean, who does that, right? Who goes to a park in the sunshine and sits around with their mates with a flagon of cider and a few cans of lager? Who does that, like, you know? Some police forces said it was appalling. Appalling scenes. Appalling scenes of people enjoying themselves in the sunshine. One police force, yeah. Here's a Samuel McConkey. Samuel McConkey. He's an infectious disease expert, allegedly. He was on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning and he had a message for people who might fancy going to sit outdoors and have a drink in the sunshine. McConkey.
This is a virus that transmits indoors. So if we as a whole population can all get out and enjoy the good weather and have fun, hopefully a bit distance from each other, that's much preferable to the indoor dining, indoor sharing air together, indoor cramped party. So I really think we need to be leading an outdoor wave of activity, whether it's, you know, tennis, hurling, GAA, football, getting out.
I think it's more sitting around drinking, though, isn't it? That's
the problem with drinking is that it inhibits your frontal lobe. Once your frontal lobe suffers, well, then your whole following the rules.
Tell that to the thousands who were out in Hyde Park in Leeds yesterday.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure about drinking in the park now. But it's better than drinking indoors. Yeah. But, and a bit of drinking, well, you know, we all do a bit of that. But, you know, it would be better if we could do it far away. And the problem is our inhibitions.
What was that? It would be better. What did he say there? I love these guys. What did he say?
You know, it would be better if we could do it far away. And the problem is our...
It would be better if we could do it far away.
Our inhibitions disappear. After 3-4 drinks, we all stop thinking and we get a bit physically intimate, you know, drinking on us. So that's the problem. So it's a challenge.
I think I can barely remember physically intimate, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
With strangers.
Hilarious, isn't it? I love this garbage, you know. Do meet up in the park with your friends, but it's better if you drink far away. Get over there. I'll meet you in the park at 5 o'clock, but get over there under that tree. I'll stay here 25 metres away from each other or whatever. Madness. And the BBC has got a doctor called Nigat Arif. If I pronounce that name wrong, I couldn't give a shit, really. Nigat Arif. She's a doctor and she appears on the BBC. And amazingly this morning, she was giving advice to people who might be a bit scared to emerge from shielding during the pandemic. Because apparently people who are told to shield have basically turned into agoraphobiacs. They've gotten agoraphobia now, or agoraphobia. How do you say it? Agoraphobia? Agoraphobia. Yeah, that's what's happened to them. And I swear to God and to Sonny, Jesus. She was on television this morning giving advice to people that are terrified about going out as the pandemic winds down. Don't believe that either. She actually said, if you're really scared, why don't you try going down to the garden gate and hang around there for a few minutes now. Back indoors, that's enough for today. Calm yourself now. Tomorrow, open the gate and step through it onto the footpath outside your property. Couple of minutes. Back in, take a deep breath and go back in if you're feeling anxious. Day 3, walk through the gate, walk down the footpath or the sidewalk as the Yankees call it. Walk down the footpath to the end of the street and then come back and so on until you feel okay in open air situations again. This is what we're listening to. 23 minutes past 5. Yeah, how about them apples, eh? Eh? How about them apples? Hi to Gail, hi to Tim, hi to Dean Smith. The whole thing, says Dean, is about vaccine addiction. I believe the plan is they ruin the immune system so bad, if people don't get the booster in time, they will drop dead, says Dean. Similar to that movie In Time, where the seconds click down and then you're dead, says Dean Smith. Thank you, Dean. Nice to hear from you, pal. Let me scroll on down there. John's in Austin, Texas, who says, send the lovely weather back here because it's bucketing doon, says John. It's bucketing doon in Austin, in Texas. How do we know that climate change is real? Well, if you're in the UK, you ask a bin man and a delivery driver, they'll tell you.
You're born and bred in Glasgow and you've noticed the weather changing.
The rain seems to be getting heavier. Sometimes you get up in the morning and it's bucketing it down.
Bucketing it down, bucketing it down. That's how you know, yeah, that it's climate change time. Brilliant. William says in Scotland, speaking of the Scots, the sweaty socks, William says, I'll meet you for a pint. Where at? Far away. That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, it went from the sublime to the ridiculous yesterday, didn't it? With Bharat Pankania telling people not to make any new friends. Listen now, we're in a pandemic. Don't make any new friends. You have enough friends now for the time being. You make any more friends, well, you know you're going to spread that virus. So stick with the friends you have. Bharat Pankania. What time is it now? 24 and a half minutes past five. Keep those tweets coming in at BBG Richie. At BBG Richie. Fabrizio says all medical treatments have adverse effects. To dismiss that out of hand is ignorant and foolish. Anyone doing so has no place offering opinions or advice on any subject, says Fabrizio. Yes, I suppose. I don't know what you're talking about, really. 2,207 people died within 2 months. Let's say 3 months in Scotland, 28 days after having a COVID vaccine. You can probably multiply that by 10 in the rest of the UK. That's something that bears investigating, number one. And number two, that's a stone-cold reason not to have one of these experimental gene therapy drugs. I would have said Fabrizio, but you knock yourself out, pal. You have the vaccine if you want. I don't tell people what to do. I never will. I say what I will do, and I say why. What you do, it's up to yourself. Paul is in Devon. He says the kids are in the garden playing with their friends, and it's lovely to hear their laughter. Indeed, Paul, indeed. Right, here's a tune. I don't know, I've just dragged one out of the system. I have no idea what it is. Genuinely, what is it? All right, Mark Morrison it is. 26 minutes past five, Wednesday's programme, March 31st, 2021. The BBG. Mark Morrison on The Richie Allen Show. Thanks a lot to Spiro Skouras, a friend and colleague of mine. You know Spiro, activist post, of course, and the Spiro Skouras YouTube channel. Sent me a couple of interesting and disturbing stories. One about a man whose skin peeled away from his body after having a vaccine. And another one that talks about a mother and a baby being united after the baby was born and the baby being covered in plastic because of coronavirus. Yeah, there's not a day goes by, really. Not a day goes by that I'm not horrified by what I'm seeing, what I'm witnessing, what I'm hearing, but there you go. I want to welcome back to the programme a brilliant journalist and broadcaster. He has been speaking with me on my programmes now for years. He's been gracing my programmes for years. Terrific guy. Do follow him through his website, stephenlendman.org. That's stephenlendman.org. Live to the Windy City to our great friend, the one and only Stephen Lendman. Stephen, thanks so much for coming back today. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Richie, and great to be on with you. And I must say, the Windy City is very, very windy today.
Is it windy? Irony is so thick today you could choke on it. I'm in the northwest of the UK, where it's constantly cold and constantly windy. But we've got Florida-type weather today, Stephen. It's absolutely gorgeous here. I should be out sunbathing and talking to you from an outside broadcast, but there you are. I have no sympathy for you anyway, because you always get beautiful summers there. We get nothing, just grey and dull and bloody England, but there you are. Brilliant to have you back. When I said you were coming on, you're much loved by the listeners to this programme, and they were fascinated to know, and you don't have to tell us because it's none of our business really, but have you been offered a coronavirus vaccine at this point? And if so, what did you think? Tell me to mind my own business now if you want, by the way.
Oh, no, not at all. This is a big issue for me, Richie. Amazingly, none of my doctors, and I've seen a number of them in the past few months, nobody raised the subject about my getting a COVID vaccine. It would be in the case of Johnson & Johnson, in the case of Pfizer and Moderna, they are not vaccines. They're experimental mRNA technology that alters the DNA permanently of anybody who takes them. Amazingly, none of my doctors raised the issue of taking one of these things. And I'm amazed. because my primary physician almost always reminds me to get a flu shot, which I do not want, and I'll never take another one. But she never even brought that up this year. It said nothing about a COVID jab. So I'm still waiting. Maybe they haven't gotten any drugs into their office yet. I really don't know. But if they raise the topic, I will give them an earful.
Brilliant, Stephen. Everybody knows you because you've been on television for years. You know, we've seen you on RT, we've seen you on Press TV, you've been on here, you have the I'm not comparing myself now to RT or Press TV or anything like that, but you've been on here with me for years. Even when I was doing television in London, you were on there. And so everybody knows that you are a gentleman who is in his late 80s. So that is kind of extraordinary that they've not tried to convince you to have it. Wow, really? But then I suppose if you've given them, you know, an indication that you don't want the flu vaccine, maybe they expect you to say no, so they're giving you a wide berth, maybe. But it's very surprising.
Well, that could very well be. I will see a doctor next Monday who, the last time I saw him, I said to him, you know, everything going on is a hoax. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I know.
Did he, Stephen? So
you really surprised me. I thought he was going to give me an argument and say, no, you don't know what you're talking about. He did not say that. He said exactly what I hoped he would say. And I sent him a couple of my articles that I really thought hit home a very important discussion of the greater issues. And I think he agreed with the stuff that I wrote. I mean, I quoted and cited very eminent people, scientists, doctors. So they saw exactly where I'm coming from and where they're coming from. But this one doctor who's really done a great deal to help me, I've known him since July of 2014. He's helped me immensely. And I always look forward to seeing him. I see him once a quarter. Next Monday is my next date. And I'll raise the subject again a little bit. And I'm sure he'll nod at me again and say, yeah, I know what's going on.
I know. He didn't expand on saying, I know, did he? He just said, I know.
We did get into a long discussion about this, and he's a very busy guy. He's got more patients than he can handle, so I don't want to tie him up with a long discussion. But we do talk a little bit about these things, and one of my other doctors, I think, is also on the same track, and occasionally he does take a little bit of time to talk about issues with me, and I love that. And they're the only ones that way. The others... I have a retinologist that I see who's a very nice guy. I like him very much, and he's helped me a great deal. I brought up the subject of the COVID hoax. It didn't go down well with him. He didn't give me an argument about it, but he really wanted to move on to another topic and not discuss it. So I moved along with him. Now, he's busy too, but I mean, there's nothing more important than your health. And if we're being lied to and told to do things that could only harm us and not do us any good, I can't think of anything more important to discuss than that.
Absolutely. I had a wisdom tooth problem just before Christmas, and my regular dentist couldn't do anything about it for a week because of crazy guidelines about procedures. So he said, I can see you, and then I've got to book you in for an aerosol procedure, because when I'm drilling and pulling out the tooth, I've got to book that in because of COVID. But I couldn't wait a week, so I had to find an emergency 24-hour dentist to do it. Cost me a fortune. But both dentists, my real dentist and the young man who eventually took out the wisdom tooth, both of them said to me the same thing. They said, this is nonsense. And the younger guy said to me, this is no worse than seasonal flu, and I don't understand what's happening. So I want to ask you, again, I'm not trying to embarrass you by talking about your age, but you're a vastly experienced gentleman. I think one of the biggest problems we have in society in the 21st century is we've forgotten to listen to people like yourself, who you're hale, you're hearty, you know, you're going strong, but you've lived a lot longer than I have and than most of my listeners have. We've lost touch with listening to our elders and our seniors. What do you think is going on then? What's going on, Stephen? What is this really all about? What is it leading to?
Well, in a word, I think it's leading to no good, but I think the agenda is very diabolical, Richie. I think what's going on is part of the Great Reset. I imagine you discussed that in your program, but the Great Reset, for people who aren't familiar with it, they may know the term, but maybe not familiar with what it's all about. It's really all about transforming world societies from what they were pre-COVID to a ruler-serf societies. In other words, destroying free and open societies, making them ruler-serf societies, eliminating all rights, and doing it in a way that you convince people to go along with what self-inflicts harm. I mean, just imagine, people were convinced to go along voluntarily with house arrest for a number of months early last year. They've gone along with mass jabbing, with toxins. COVID is seasonal flu. One doctor I admire greatly, and I've written a couple of times about him, Dr. Vernon Coleman. I'm not certain where he lives. He may live in Britain. I don't know.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
he lives in Britain. Have you had him on?
Yeah, he's been on the program. Yeah, he's an English former GP, retired GP, but a very successful author. Has been writing about medicine and health for many years. Great guy, yeah.
Oh, indeed, he's written over 100 books. And in a recent article he wrote, he said, COVID is seasonal flu. And the expression I like to use is COVID renamed seasonal flu, yeah. Or COVID now called seasonal flu. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Last year and this year, seasonal flu that always shows up like clockwork in Western societies, in other nations, completely disappeared.
Gone.
And annual flu shots that are promoted all the time, including by doctors, my doctors, no more promotion of seasonal flu shots. Now they're promoting COVID jabs. But how could seasonal flu disappear when it always shows up? Well, because seasonal flu is now called COVID. There are no vaccines that are needed. For most people under age 60, maybe under age 70, the recovery rate from seasonal flu exceeds 99%.
That's right.
And people above age 70, it's over at least 95%. And in these cases, no drugs are needed. Many years ago, I think I was in my 50s. I'm in my 80s now, but in my 50s, I had seasonal flu once. It knocked me out, Richie, drained my energy, took my appetite away. I couldn't do anything for a few days. I took no meds, saw no doctors, recovered fully with no after effects, and everything was fine. That's the way everybody can handle this, except the aged, people with other issues, people on a cocktail of other drugs, and they may need some special help. But the vaccines and the mRNA technology, they're not designed to prevent people from contracting flu, now called COVID. All they're designed to do, and I'm not sure if they do that, is ease the symptoms if you get flu. But if you take these jabs, you instead of getting protection that you won't get, you'll be more susceptible to getting flu, now called COVID. And that's the truth. People who have been jabbed are contracting flu in much greater numbers than people who aren't doing it, including in nursing homes, in greater societies. The whole thing that's going on, I call it the mother of all public health scams, and that's exactly what it is.
Faisal is listening to this. Tweets are flying in, by the way. Stephen is on Twitter as well. Follow him. He's Activist Writer on Twitter, at Activist Writer. Follow him there. Faisal says he agrees with you. A return to a serf peasant-based society, as you succinctly described it, Stephen. Horrifying, really. And yet the public is going along with it. Do you see in the coming years, it won't just be invented health crises, but it'll also be things like climate change and other, invented crises to encourage people to go along with basically destroying themselves financially, giving up their possessions, giving up their properties and all the other things. Is that what it's going to be like?
I think dystopia is already here, Richie, and it'll only get deeper and worse as we look ahead. I've said many times, the country I grew up in was far from beautiful, not beautiful at all. It was terribly racist when I was a youth, a boy or an adolescent, a youth, terribly racist. It's still terribly racist, but the U.S. and the West overall has really lost whatever opportunities there may be for the great majority of their people. Growing up, I was a kid with nothing special going for me, but I got into two great universities when it was very cheap to go. I could go and pay for it almost entirely by myself, by summer jobs, by part-time jobs during the school year. I could never do that now. It's much too expensive. And the benefits that I had growing up, they're literally all gone now. The nation is not the country that I grew up in long ago. And I grew up during World War II, before World War II began, but throughout the whole war that I remember well. But now that, but there was an interim of peace after World War II, for about 5 years, the mid-1940s until June 1950, when Harry Truman attacked North Korea, a country threatening nobody from then to the present day. Yet it's been reinvented to an arch enemy of world peace, which it is not. It's a country that values peace. The same goes for Russia and China and Iran and Venezuela and Cuba, all of the countries that are on the U.S. target list for regime change. The Western countries are the ones that are waging endless wars against countries threatening nobody. And this stuff goes on all the time. And the nations are threatening. There's one common theme that defines them all. They're free from U.S. control, and that's, the U.S. will not accept that. It wants them transformed into pro-Western vassal states. And, of course, it's waging war on its own people, the mass jabbing stuff and everything else. But it's just terrible, the stuff that's going on. I'm glad I'm not young, Richie, because young people, as I was long ago, today, what the opportunities I had to look forward to, they do not exist for young people in America, and I believe in the West overall today. They are gone.
It's a great article on your website about the U.S., you know, listing the abuse, the human rights abuses around the world and not pointing the lens at itself. Go to stephenlendman.org. Listen, I agree with 90% of that. What I would say is, though, I agree with you. We've got no business dictating to Iran, to North Korea, to Russia, to China or anybody else. Certainly not. I would say, though, I wouldn't like to live in North Korea, and I wouldn't like to live in China. I wouldn't. I'm not saying now that we are any more free than they, because that would be foolish, and it would be, well, it would be absolutely ridiculous because of what's been happening in our countries in the last 12 months and even before then. But I wouldn't like to live in North Korea. I certainly wouldn't like to live in China, Stephen.
Well, I agree with you, Richie, and I would add one thing to what you're saying. I would not want to live in any country that's burdened with U.S. sanctions, and the sanctions, of course, are illegal. Yeah. The sanctions have imposed great hardships on people in these countries. I just wrote about the humanitarian crisis in Syria. Besides the war going on, the sanctions imposed on Syria have caused a devastating humanitarian crisis. The country is mostly free from war in most of its territory, by no means all of it, not in the north, not in the south, but in the greater portion of the central parts of the country, there's no war going on. There are still pockets of ISIS and other terrorists, but it's minor compared to the way it was a number of years ago. But the humanitarian crisis is absolutely devastating for the people. I forget all the numbers that I quoted using data supplied by a Russian assistant foreign secretary, something like 90% of Syrian people are impoverished. I remember that one. 60% of the people are food insecure. They don't know where their next meal is coming from. 60%, 17 million Syrians and 60% of them don't know where the next meal is coming from. That's not because of Damascus. That's because of the endless war by other means, along with war in parts of the hot war in parts of the country going on. And now we're past a decade of war, and there's no end of it. So the Syrians are suffering terribly. Iranians are doing poorly because of the sanctions, just piled on. I have no idea how many sanctions have been imposed on these countries, but I do remember a quote by Vladimir Putin a number of months ago saying, under Trump, Russia was sanctioned 46 times.
46.
And Trump improved relations with Russia. He didn't get it because Congress wouldn't let him have better relations. But 46 times Russia was sanctioned, and there have been more sanctions now. And all of the countries free from U.S. control have been sanctions. And the sanctions mostly hurt the ordinary people in these countries. And that's why I would not want to live in any of them.
Good. That's a very good point on Trump and the sanctions against Russia. Paul Craig Roberts comes on this program with me from time to time, and he gives Trump a pass in certain areas. And he believes, does Paul Craig Roberts, I don't agree with him, and we've had a couple of ding-dongs on the programme, but that's a good thing, no bad thing. But Paul believes that Trump was genuine in his desire to normalise relations with Russia, but that Trump was naive and didn't understand the cesspool that is Washington, D.C. He had no idea what he was getting into. Do you go along with any of that?
Yeah, I do. I think the reason Trump wanted to normalize relations with Russia is because of his business. Although I don't know what involvement he's got with his business now. He was away from it for 4 years, and he's doing other things. And I don't follow what he's doing now. He's got a new website. I'll have to take a look at it and see what he's putting up. But I think what he really wanted to do was have a good relations with Russia, so Trump Corporation could do a lot of business in Russia. I think he had dollars and cents in mind for wanting good relations. Yeah. But of course, he didn't get them because Congress wouldn't let him have good relations. No with China. I mean, he was very, very rough on China. The trade war was unconscionable, shouldn't have happened, and it's continuing under Biden. The same stuff is in place, same sanctions on Russia, same stuff on Iran, Venezuela, all the other countries. Biden does not appear in public. There is an impersonator who represents Biden in public, because the real Biden is too deteriorated cognitively and, I believe, physically to do anything.
Now hold that thought, because if anybody else said that, I would laugh at them and I would poke fun at them. But because it's you, and because of your experience and because of your common sense, I want to come back to that and ask you for a bit more on it. But the article on the humanitarian crisis in Syria that you've written on stephenlendman.org is a brilliant article, even though it's terribly depressing. They've been doing it for years. They did it to Iraq. They did it to Venezuela. We could list the countries. We could be here all day long. Now, you're far more experienced in reporting on geopolitical events than I am, and I mean that. Is there any way that you could see that China and Venezuela and Iran and Russia and other countries, not militarily, in any way militarily, but is there any way that they could take care of each other's needs and get around those sanctions? I mean, I saw, tragically, I nearly died I won't say surprised, but it upset me. Maduro has been offering oil for vaccines, which I find to be absolutely insane if it's true, but, you know, apparently he has been. But what about these countries coming together and saying, between us all, we can provide each other with the material things we need to rebuild our societies and to employ our citizens and to prosper? Could they do that, Stephen?
Well, they really have to some extent. Iran has done a great job of that. And look at the deal Iran and China just consummated together, a 25-year economic strategic relationship where China will pour something like $400 billion into Iran, maybe even more than that. And in return, China will get cheap Iranian oil. China needs oil very, very badly, growing its economy. It needs energy, oil and gas to continue growing its economy, which is doing pretty well, I would imagine. Certainly doing a lot better than the U.S. economy and other Western economies. But it's a good arrangement for both countries. Iran wants a similar arrangement, something similar with Russia. Russia doesn't need Iranian oil. It's got plenty of its own. Yeah. But a strategic relationship between both countries. And I think Iran is also talking about a strategic relationship with other countries. The more strategic relationships these countries have with each other, the more they strengthen each other, and the more they lessen the effects of what I call U.S. war by other means against them. So Iran will be better off when this deal with China really gets going. It was just consummated just a few days ago.
Yeah.
So it's going, and that'll take a little time. But that definitely will help Iran. It'll help China. I think there's a growing relationship between Iran and Russia and hopefully other countries. So they're moving in the right direction. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
No.
This stuff takes time. But over time, I see the U.S. weakening, losing influence, losing strength, while these other nations are rising, Richie. And I think if we could look ahead 10 or 20 years, it would be a big difference between what's going on now.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I hope they don't eventually decide to come for us. You know, I mean, that's not out of the bounds of possibility either. You know, I hope that in the future, these countries don't decide well, you know, because that's often what happens. I mean, the United States and the UK and Israel and France have been bullying and hammering these countries for decades. I agree with you. You've written about this for years. You're brilliant. But often when the bullying victim gets a little bit of power, they can often go down a bad road. And I'd be worried that in some years' time that these countries might come for us. But look, that's obviously worst case scenario. I hope that wouldn't happen. What you described there about Iran and Russia and China, God have mercy on his soul, but Hugo Chavez tried to do that in South America, didn't he, Stephen?
Yeah, that one ended very badly. There's no question that Obama killed Chavez. No question about poison. And I remember so well when it happened, 2013, I may be a little off in my chronology, but I think it was about 2013, where Chavez had apparently incurable cancer. Whatever they gave him what was incurable. He had four major surgeries in about 18 months in Cuba, first-rate health care, and they couldn't save him. And he wanted to live. He didn't want to die.
Yeah.
But he must have been so badly infected that whatever they did to help, they couldn't save him. It was a great tragedy. And of course, Venezuela was a model democracy, still very democratic, but the country has been ruined by U.S. sanctions, and the people have been greatly deprived.
Absolutely.
And Mark Weisbrot, economist, has estimated that since the sanctions really kicked in very heavily over the last 4 or 5 years or so, something like 40,000 Venezuelans died from deprivation or maybe illnesses that weren't properly treated. I mean, Venezuela doesn't have money because it can't sell enough oil to get the money it needs because of U.S. sanctions.
And the Bank of England is holding its assets, right? A lot of its money. I mean, it's staggering. And for me, Hugo Chavez and Bolivarianism, Hugo Chavez is one of the greatest human beings that ever walked the face of the earth, in my opinion. I'm an old school socialist. I understand what socialism means. Socialism is a dirty word these days. It's used to describe things that are not socialist. It's used to describe people that are fascistic in the things they do. Hugo Chavez was a socialist, an amazing man. The things that he achieved in Venezuela, I'll never stop talking about them. I know you never will either, Stephen. Stephen Lendman is our guest. One of my favourite people of all time, and I'm not just saying that. I love Stephen. StephenLendman.org. Read his articles, folks. Share the website with other people. And it's at activist writer. Now, let's get back to this. We've not had a good argument for a long time, me and you. Are you telling me, Mr. Lendman, that you believe that the Biden who turns up in public, I mean, he's only been in office a matter of weeks, really, but you think they might be using a double because you're not convinced he's compos mentis, or are you pulling my leg, my friend?
I have heard the real Biden be unable to complete a sentence without mumbling and bumbling. I've also seen images of Biden and his impersonator, and there were noticeable differences between the two. The most noticeable is the demeanor of one versus the other. But in addition to that, the physical differences, there is a slightly different shape, and one has blue eyes and the other has brown eyes.
Wow.
I forget which is which. Two different people. Where they came up with a guy who looks so much like Biden, but their demeanor in public is so much different. The reason the impersonator botched the press conference that he gave, I called it the charade of a Biden presser that I wrote about, was he's not a politician. I don't know who he is, but he's not a politician. He hasn't been around the track a number of times. Doesn't know the history. Doesn't know anything about what's going on. All he knows how to do is read the lines he's given. One thing he was given the images with numbers on them and names of the journalists he was to call on during the presser. And he even botched that up a little bit. He had it right in front of him, but he could only call on the ones that were circled for him. But he simply could not answer questions properly because he doesn't know this stuff. He can read a teleprompter. He does a good job of that, which the real Biden cannot do. Richie, I have no doubt that the real Biden, when big stuff is happening, he's either out to lunch or he's napping and other people are doing stuff in his name. And the guy who appears in public, makes addresses, gave the press up, makes public addresses, is an impersonator, a double.
And you're not prone to saying things like this. That's why I'm astonished that you're saying it. I've learned enough over the years to not dismiss an idea out of hand just because it sounds preposterous. My God, look at some of the things that have happened in over the years, September the 11th, and I could go on and on and on. Why would they do that? Why not just get rid of Biden? Surely to the people that are leading us to the Great Reset, Stephen, that are leading us to the Fourth Industrial Revolution, surely they don't care who the president is. And if Biden is so, you know, incapacitated, why not just put something in his tea and give Kamala Harris the job? Why not?
Well, that's a very good point, Richie. You might say, why did they let this guy run in the first place?
Yeah.
Knowing his dementia, that absolutely, well, I should say absolutely, most of will become Alzheimer's disease. It would make him completely dysfunctional mentally. I've seen what Alzheimer's disease does to an individual. My mother had dementia, and it transformed to Alzheimer's disease. A woman who was a magician in her heyday didn't know who I was. That was her state at the end. So that Biden is heading for the same thing if he lives long enough. But indeed, why do they let a guy like this run? They couldn't find somebody else to run against Trump. And Trump still won the election. And Biden stole the people behind Biden stole the election. They could have put anybody up and stolen the election. They didn't need Biden.
Why did they do that?
The only thing that makes sense to me is that because of his dysfunctional state, they can do anything they want. They can run wild. And there's nobody in the White House who's going to challenge him the way Trump would challenge somebody for something he didn't like. That was a big reason why they wanted
Wouldn't Kamala Harris have to be in on that? Because she's done so many appearances with him. She would surely know if she was not standing next to the real Joe Biden.
Oh, I think she has to know. And she's representing the U.S. in dealings with other countries. She hasn't made a foreign trip, I don't think. But in dealing, she's talking to one foreign leader after another. I think Biden has had a couple of perfunctory brief chats with some people. I think Netanyahu may have been one, Israel, and maybe a couple of others. But basically, Harris has taken over the job of dealing with other foreign leaders. And I mean, my guess is Biden will last a year, maybe a little bit longer, as long as they keep this charade going. I mean, the media keep it going because they refuse to tell the truth. There are a few exceptions. The New York Post, Fox News a little bit. A Boston Herald writer wrote a scathing article about Biden. I mean, basically saying some of the things that I just said. And so I don't know how long this charade can go on, but I highly doubt that Biden will last 4 years in office. He may not even last 1 year.
Yeah, you wouldn't be surprised sometime later this year to be told that Joe has passed away in his sleep. You just wouldn't be surprised, would you? And then, of course, Kamala Harris would see out the rest of the 3 years or the 2.5 years. She'd be sworn in and then she'd be off to the races, as we say here. It's an incredible theory. I wouldn't dismiss it, and I certainly wouldn't patronise you, Stephen, to be honest. I wouldn't dare do that. You've never, it's not your type of, it's not the sort of thing you would say. But listen, as I said, so many crazy, weird things have happened in recent years that I would have immediately dismissed in the past. And then I found out that they were true, that who knows? And Mark tweets this, by the way. Let me just read you Mark's. He agrees with you, by the way. This is Mark Wilde on Twitter. A lot of interest in my friend Stephen Lendman, unsurprisingly. Mark says, Stephen has a really good point. We don't see or hear much of Biden, not many press conferences, etc. Then he just pops up for the cameras to look like he's doing the job. But behind the scenes, it's maybe being run by others. So a bit of support there on Twitter from some of our listeners. I think you might be onto something, Stephen.
I honestly don't think that Biden is fully aware of things being done in his name. If I would never have a conversation with him, but I think if I ever did, and I would say some things, that he would be astonished at what I would tell him about what's going on by his regime, which is what I call it, and say, "Oh no, we're not doing that." Well, yes, you are doing that. This is the kind of stuff that's going on. But he's got a hardline bunch that's surrounding him, especially foreign policy, but domestic as well. He's got, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, Victoria Nuland in a high position. You've got a general as the War Secretary. I never call him a Defense Secretary, a War Secretary. You get these kind of people surrounding him, and these are the ones that are making policy and doing things. And I really don't think he's fully aware of the things that are going on in his name, and maybe in his state, he doesn't care anymore.
Maybe not. Stephen, brilliant to have you back on. Thanks for coming on. Love you coming on. And I read you all the time. You know that. Stephen's website is stephenlendman.org. Go there. The Progressive Radio News Hour, Stephen, that hasn't been curtailed by the virus. Tell us then where people can get to listen to that.
Oh, no, because of health, I've got health issues that I'm dealing with. They're pretty stable at this point. But I gave up that radio program a few years ago.
Oh, did you, Stephen? I thought you were still doing that, would you believe?
I couldn't keep it up. No. I couldn't do the job I wanted to do, so I had to give it up. And what I really want to do most is write, and I try to do as much of that as I can. But I couldn't do that, and I couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. I've reached that time of life. I'll be 87 in August, Richie.
87 in August, incredible, huh? You sound fantastic, and your writing is as cogent and as sharp as it ever was. And I'm not kissing your backside. I mean that when I say it. And people can go to stephenlendman.org and find out for themselves. I hope you'll come back in a few weeks' time, Stephen, and tell us about how your conversation goes with your doctor when you see him next Monday. That will be fascinating.
Well, he's one of my favourite doctors, and I do look forward to seeing him. Richie, you know I'm delighted to come on anytime.
You're a gent, Stephen. Thanks so much. I hope it's not so windy later on there in Chicago. Lovely to have you back. The great Stephen Lendman on the Richie Allen Radio Show for Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. Brilliant, brilliant writer. And was a great broadcaster. Didn't realise he wasn't doing that programme anymore. I couldn't access it. I couldn't access it from here. It was a live programme. The Progressive Radio News Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. It used to be a 3 times a week programme, but I think it's archived. I'm sure you'll get it on YouTube and elsewhere. Great guy. Gerald Celente will be with me in a few minutes' time, live from Kingston in New York City. The time is 6:04. Here's Gareth Ike. I love this tune. Absolutely love this tune. It's called Jura. And I will read some of your tweets as well when I come back from this. You've been tweeting me, so you have. Oh, join the sky to the sea. Gareth Ike and Jura on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 6:08 this Wednesday. Love that song. Loved it the first time I heard it. Brilliant song. Even got him to play it at his own wedding. Yeah, you have to be famous. Infamous. Brilliant tune. Brilliant bunch of lads that recorded that record with Gareth as well. Stephen Lendman, brilliant guy. I don't know what to make of that Biden double story. I really don't. I mean, if I had to put money on it, I wouldn't believe it. But, hey, what the hell do I know? I've had so many incredible guests on my programmes over the years. Incredible is probably apt as well. Some of the things that we've discussed, you know. I think of Bart Sabrell, whom I love, and I'm still in touch with. Bart is the man who made the film A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. He doesn't believe that the moon landings ever happened, and he's made some very fascinating films about that subject. I think one of the astronauts that he doesn't believe went to the moon punched him in the face one time. I'm not sure if it was Buzz Aldrin or Neil Armstrong. You might help me out. I can't remember. But I've had some fascinating stuff over the years. One of my favourite stories, one of the funniest things I've ever heard, is the Fall McCartney story. You've heard the Fall McCartney story, haven't you? That's the story that Paul McCartney died years and years and years and years ago, and that he was replaced by a fake Paul McCartney. And apparently the Abbey Road album and the album cover throws up all the clues that you need to believe that Paul died years and years and years ago. I've heard some fantastic stuff on this programme over the years that I've been doing it, and before that, when I was doing it in Spain and even in London. But I've just learned not to laugh at people or dismiss people, because you just don't know, you know. I get bombarded by people asking me to cover the flat earth theory. Do it, Richie. Do it, Richie. It'll open your mind. It'll change your life. And I'm like, I don't. Number one, I don't believe the earth is flat. I don't believe the earth is flat, number one. And number two, strangely enough, I don't believe, even if that is true, that ultimately it really matters if you believe that we live in a simulation. You know what I'm saying? So I get accused by certain people of trying to cover the truth, to hide it. But I'm not. I direct people sometimes to the websites. I say, look, go and have a look. And you might think, yeah, they've convinced me the earth is flat. I don't cover anything up. I certainly don't suppress any information. But there are things I'm not really that interested in discussing. Flat earth is one, because I'll just argue with the guys and we might end up falling out. But anyway, look, I don't know. What do you think? It's a BBG Richie on Twitter. Yeah, I've had them all on. The Bruce Lee Brigade. Guy came on with me one night. I was on the radio in Spain one night and it was very, very warm and the air conditioning in the studio, we had great air conditioning, but it had failed. Can you imagine it? On the Costa del Sol. It was in August and it was melting. I was the only person in the studio and so I had all the doors open leading out to the foyer and to reception, and I had the front doors open and everything, right? I could see right down the corridor. No joy. I was sweltering. And a bloke rang up and told me that he was Bruce Lee. Because it was an open phone-in. The calls weren't screened. Same way that I do my phone-ins now. Guy rang up and told me. And he was very serious, this guy. And he sounded old. Sounded like an older gentleman. And he did have an accent that might lead you to believe that he originated in the Orient. So he had an accent. He told me he was Bruce Lee. I kept him on for about 25 minutes. It was good fun. He was telling me about the films he made, The Big Boss and how he did that, and living in California. Amazing. And ultimately, he was on the run. That's why he was telling me he was Bruce Lee. And I said, but if you're on the run, what are you ringing in? What are you telling me for? Surely now the people chasing you will know who you are. But he had an answer for that as well. I've had them all on and I love it. It's the best part of broadcasting, really. You never know who you're going to talk to, you know. Steve says, Richie, it was Buzz Aldrin who slapped Bart. Bart had a Bible. That's right. Bart had a Bible. And he said to Buzz Aldrin, put your hand on the Bible there now, Buzz, and swear to God that you walked on the moon. Buzz Aldrin lost his temper and gave him a dig. And what makes me laugh is those who believe that we never went to the moon. Now, I might surprise you. I don't believe we've ever been to the moon. I don't, personally. That's my opinion. I don't believe we've ever been there. Anyway, there you go, right? Right. So when Buzz Aldrin smacked Bart and wouldn't put his hand on the Bible, that was proof enough for some people. That was proof enough. Well, it must be fake. Why? Well, he wouldn't swear on the Bible. Yeah. He wouldn't swear on the Bible. That's absolute proof. Well, we don't need any more proof that we never walked on moon. Did you walk on moon? Put your hand on Babel. Swear on Babel. And then he just gave Bart a dig in the puss. He gave him a dig in the snoz and said, get away from me, you madman. But no, I've seen Bart's films. I love Bart. I'll get him on again. I'll get him on. We're tired of talking about coronavirus. I'll get Bart on. We'll have a good chat. He's a lovely bloke. Very, very approachable and doesn't mind being criticised. He's open to it. He's got thick skin, does Bart, yeah. Alan in Liverpool says, brilliant, who hasn't wanted to be like Bruce? I'll never forget that. It was one of the funniest nights I've ever had on talk radio. I've never worked for talk radio. How were they allowed to name themselves talk radio? How did they get away with that? I wonder. Hartley Brewer and our pals. Anyway, that's another story. But it was one of my funniest nights ever, this guy. I'm Bruce Lee, are you? I half expected the following evening they'd all be on Elvis. I thought I'd be inundated with all of those people who never really died, you know, who never really died. Anyway, Gerald Salente, none other than the publisher of the Trends Journal, trendsresearch.com, will be dropping in with me on dropping in here in a moment or two. I'm channeling my inner Julia Hartley Brewer there. Gerald will be on with me. Kevin Barrett will be on with me tomorrow, Thursday. Very excited about that. It's been a while since Kevin has been on. Lots to get into with him. We might talk about that story, about that teacher being on the run because he showed his students the Charlie Hebdo Muhammad cartoons. Might get into that with Kevin, who is a convert to Islam. He's a Muslim, Kevin, and a great guy and a great friend of mine. So we'll get into that with Kevin as well. In the meantime, I've got to take another tune only because Gerald is not quite ready to go. And I've not even got one lined up. What kind of a radio presenter are you, Baldy? Not to have an emergency tune lined up. I've got George Baker. All right. And when we come back, this is appropriate, I think, for Gerald Salente. We're off to Kingston in New York State to meet the man himself again for our monthly chat. This is from Reservoir Dogs, of course, George Baker's selection, Little Green Bag on the Richie Allen Show. Right then, the George Baker selection, Little Green Bag, 17 minutes past 6 o'clock, Wednesday's programme. Trendsresearch.com, can't recommend it highly enough. Let's welcome back for our monthly visit, our monthly chat, the one and only legendary Gerald Salente, live from Kingston in New York State. Welcome back, my friend.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Mr. Allen.
Lovely stuff. I had Stephen Lendman on earlier on, the great octogenarian journalist. He said it's very windy in the Windy City. It's miserable there, he said. We've got balmy, sweltering temperatures here in the UK, which we're unaccustomed to. What's it looking like in Kingston there, my friend?
Well, today it's a cloudy, little rainy day. We're about 90 miles north of New York City. And the people that are escaping New York City, they're coming up to Kingston. This is the first capital of New York State. There are more pre-Revolutionary War stone buildings here than anywhere else in the country. It was the third Dutch settlement, and it was the capital of New York State. John Jay, the first Supreme Court judge, you know, the head of the joint, he was a judge over here. And the Constitution that was written for New York State, over 70% of America's Constitution comes from it. So they're coming up here with the foothills of the Catskill Mountains as well. And it's on the Hudson River. But it's a whole different crowd. These people call themselves New Yorkers, you know. I said, where are you from? We're from New York. Yeah, like in the old days, you know, there's a guy that grew up in the Bronx. I told him, go screw yourself. Who the hell are you talking to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm saying this because they come up here with this attitude. And their attitude is that you have to believe the crap that they believe in, because if you don't, you have no right to think for yourself. And what they do is they call themselves, and even the media keeps doing it, the ones that don't like them, they call them liberals. And they're not liberal. A liberal is a, by definition, willing to respect or accept behavior or opinions different from one's own, open to new ideas. These little libtards that come, I'm 15 minutes from Woodstock. It isn't the Woodstock it used to be. You wanna see some tight cats, man? Whoa. Oh, these are all the libtards. Oh no, I don't want my child to get vaccinated. They shouldn't force us to get vaccinated. Man, they're lining up and getting the jab.
Yeah.
Lining up and getting the jab. And if you're not jabbed, how dare you? How dare you? You're not making other people safe. Hey, craphead, if you're vaccinated and you're wearing a mask, you're safe, right? So leave me the hell alone. Oh, no, I'm a libtard. I'll tell you what to do. Anyway, that's what's going on.
That's what's going on. The cover of the journal is brilliant. We've discussed your artist before. It's great, Gerald. We'll talk about it in a moment. Dr. Strangevax, Vaccinate the World, an amazing rendition of Bill Gates sitting atop a rocket-fueled vaccine. Before we get to that, brilliant that you talked about the libtards, because your state, incredibly. This place, I mean, I've only been to New York one time, and I spent the time I was there, I spent in New York City. And you think of it as, you described it beautifully, as a place of freedom, of coexisting ideologies and ideas. And yet your state is rolling out something called the Excelsior Pass, which means it's likely that New Yorkers wouldn't be able to go to a jazz club or go to a restaurant unless they could prove that they were COVID-free or had a vaccine. That sounds nothing like the New York that I was mesmerised by back in 2002.
Oh, yeah, no, it's dead. New York is dead. We got this little arrogant boy. You know, you look at the list. You look at the list. George Carlin used to say, it's one big club and you ain't in it. This little arrogant boy, Andy Cuomo, a daddy's boy. Yeah. His father was Mario Cuomo. Everybody liked him. It's like George W. Bush, another little piece of crap. Got us into the Iraq War, light us in. Born on third base and thought they hit a home run. Over here, right just north of me over here in Canada. Little Trudeau, true piece of crap. You'd be nobody there, you little gutless wonder, if daddy wasn't Pierre. So you got these low-life pieces of garbage scum all telling us what to do. And this is the Cuomo, by the way. Now, you know, he's getting all these charges against him about sexual harassment, you know?
What do you think of those, Gerald? What do you think of those charges?
I got to tell you, as much as I can't stand Cuomo, the stuff that they're bringing him out on, you know, he kissed my hand. He said to me, I'm beautiful in Italian. I mean, I've been doing that all my life without making a pass on to somebody, you know. And one of my jokes is I've never, never, never raised my hand to a woman unless they wanted to be spanked.
So you think these allegations
only
are
joking, only joking.
Of course,
take
you're only joking.
Easy, everybody.
You can say you can make such gags here. This is not a safe space. What the hell is a safe space anyway?
Oh, I'm telling you, everybody's so uptight. Yeah. You're not allowed to joke around. Look at they're doing away with Mr. Potato Head, one after another. Everybody's so tight, man. So Cuomo, I mean, the things that they're bringing him up on, how about that you destroy the state? How about you, son of a bitch? You took sick people out of hospitals and put them into nursing homes, and they died.
And they died, yeah.
How about you, lying bastard? The people that were dying in nursing homes that went to hospitals, they weren't counted as dying in nursing homes. You said they died in hospitals and had COVID. Oh, and talking about that piece of crap, Trudeau, do you know what the death rate in Canada, according to Lancet?
What
80% of the people that died from COVID in Canada were from nursing homes.
Yeah.
This is what over there in the UK. What is it, like 380 people under the age of 55?
That's
died
right.
Of it?
That's right.
Yeah. So what they're doing is these sick people, these people that are running and ruining our lives, the freaks. Oh, look at their faces. Could you get freakier than Boris Johnson? No, maybe Macron. No, I like Angela Merkel. Look at the freaks running the show. Oh, we got dead boy Biden over here. You see, this cat can't walk up a flight of stairs without falling down.
Yeah.
You know, it's a freak show. The freaks are telling the people what to do. What was that little jerk I just heard over there in the UK telling people to, oh, God, not to hug?
Yeah, they're all at it. The scientists advising the government. You've got Bharat Bankani, this guy, he's a... These are all infectious disease experts. Yeah, they're telling people not to hug. It's not soon enough to be hugging people. It's astonishing stuff.
Astonishing. Yeah. Because who's dying, why, where, and how? Okay, get this in your head, everybody. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 94% of the people that died had 2.6 pre-existing comorbidities.
They're very old.
Why is the rate so high in the UK and the US? Because of obesity. That's right. Yeah. And type 2 diabetics. Oh, those are only facts. Oh, and people with respiratory ailments. And these jerks are telling people not. You know why they're telling people not? Because that they are putting forward who they are. They don't hug. They don't have a drop of passion, not an ounce of boogie, not a drop of jive. These are dead, man. These are dead, arrogant, stupid, moronic people, psychopaths, sociopaths, ruining our lives. And now you got to get vaccinated.
This is a brilliant edition of the journal. Transresearch.com, folks, subscribe to the journal. Gerald Celente and his team have been predicting trends for years and years and years accurately. A lot of people paid a lot of attention over the years to Gerald and the magazine and have done very well out of it. Pay attention to the man. Brilliant cover, as I said. Oh, Gates, nobody except you. They're fantastic covers.
Yeah.
You and a few others in the United States, this programme obviously, but outside of us, the press, the broadsheet press, the tabloid press, the broadcasters, nobody wants to ask questions as to why Bill Gates is the biggest funder, private funder of the World Health Organization. He gives it more money than any country. They don't want to ask questions about Gavi and CEPI, these huge institutions run by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which funds every university in the Western world. Nobody wants to know why Bill Gates wants to vaccinate every man, woman and child on planet Earth. But you're asking the question.
Yeah. This guy holds everyone. Look, they're sick freaks. Look at them. Look at them. Look at their faces. Look at that guy Zuckerberg. Take out that. Yeah. No. Zuckerberg. Put the F in there. Yeah. Call him that. Look at him. Look at that guy Dorsey. Look at that guy. What's his name? Paichi, whatever it is. The guy running Alphabet. Look at them. They're not men. They're little wimpy geek pieces of crap. They destroyed. The geeks have taken over the earth. The King James Bible got it wrong. Not the meek. They spelt it wrong. Look at these low lives that are running and destroying our lives. Again, you got England's chief medical officer, Chris, what is his name?
Whitty. Chris Whitty, yeah.
Yeah, how about Witless? Look at this piece of shit telling people, don't hug grandparents on Easter, even if they're vaccinated. Go screw yourself. Come over here and try to stop me.
Yeah.
That's what the people should be doing. Look at the face of this crap head. Look at him. He's a nothing. He's a scum. He's a sick bastard. Just like the sick, I got to be equal here, bitches and bastards that take us to war.
What's the end game for these people? Why?
They're sick. They're pathological liars. They're sociopaths. They're mentally disturbed. They're sociopaths. They're psychopaths. They should be in insane asylums. Eisenhower said it. Anyone that seeks the office of president is either an egomaniac or crazy. He didn't want to run. He's the guy, five-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, his farewell address, warning the American people that the military-industrial complex is robbing the nation of the genius of scientists, sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children, January 21st, 1963. All right. Right in front of 61, excuse me, right in front of everybody's eyes.
Did Kennedy listen to him?
They're crazy people. They've destroyed the earth in 1 year. You know, I went nuts about this when they launched the COVID war a year ago.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
I warned everybody that this would happen. I'm a visionary. This is my business. I'm at it for 41 years. I write books, magazines. Pop up my track record up against anybody in the world. Show me your work. I see the future. And I said they would create hell on earth. And here we are. Witty warns. Witty piece of crap. A witty wanker. Or maybe no. They just came out with a study now because of all the crap they're putting in our food. It's in the Trends Journal about how the fertility rate has dropped and men's penises shrunk.
That's right.
This guy's little one shrunk a long time ago.
they're blaming the fertility thing on, they're missing the point, aren't they? They're saying that our exposure to a type of plastic called phthalate or something like that is causing the infertility. But you and I have been speaking since I was working in Spain back in 2009. Thank God you bailed me out more times than I care to remember, coming on with me and speaking to me for ages. And we talked about that. The exposure to what we call non-ionizing radiation, men going around with cell phones in their pockets, you know, exposure to cell phone towers, microwave radiation. That's the real answer, isn't it? It's got to be.
It's part of it. It's part of it. All the poisons. Again, the poison, they're talking about this crap. Well, but you know, but the COVID's going to kill you. The COVID. Forget all the PCBs. Forget all the GMOs. Forget all the pesticides in your food. Forget about all the chemicals they put in the Guardian just came out with a story today. They did a study about all the toxins in the water in America.
Yeah.
Again, this little, remember I said it's one big club. That arrogant little boy. Witty, Christopher John McCrae Witty, was born in Gloucester, April 1966, blah, 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 blah. His father was deputy director of the British Council in Athens. Oh, and was killed by militants. Yeah. Oh, yeah, militants. You know what a militant is? Oh, the UK? Oh, Salenti, you should be calmer and speak like they do in England. They're so proper. They had the world never set on the British Empire, one of the most murderous nations in the world. Oh, there are problems going on in Myanmar, and the UK is coming out against the violence that the military is committing on the people. While these son of a bitches overthrew the country, what, about 120 years ago?
Yeah.
Occupied it for 120 years up until about 1948.
Not to mention what went on in Iran, Mossadegh, we could be here all day long.
Oh, yeah, one after another.
Yeah, one after another.
One after another.
Transresearch.com.
One after another.
Tell me this, number of people that we know, mutual friends of ours, believe that, but everything you've said about these people and their characters, many of them are caricatures, but their characters, the psychosis, nobody could deny that. And you've never been one to blow your own trumpet, you haven't, but you're right. You've been predicting this stuff for years and years and years. This Agenda 30, this great reset, this technological revolution that they, that many of our mutual friends believe this is all going towards, ultimately a depopulation agenda. They want to get rid of most of us, don't they?
No, they're killing us. They're killing us, right? Look, the vaccine has not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration in America. They put it in as an emergency. This thing, it takes, what, about 12 years to see the long-term effects of a vaccination.
Normally, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they just rush this thing through. I cannot begin to tell you how many people I know that are getting vaccinated. They are buying this thing 100%. And you mentioned about the media. You know, I call these guys prostitutes and women. They're media whores that get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and the government whoremasters. And, oh, by the way, this guy, this Witty, you ready?
Go on.
He worked as a physician and researcher into infectious diseases in the UK, Africa, and Asia in 2008. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
That's right. Yeah, they're all up to the next in it.
Awarded the LSHTM £31 million. Whitney's a whore. He's a whore. He got paid off.
There's about 30 members of a committee known as SAGE in the UK, which is advising Johnson's government. And as far as I can make out, my own research tells me that at least 2/3 of them, Gerald, you know this, have taken money from Gates. Now, not necessarily taken it personally, but a project they were involved in or a study over the years. They are all up to their necks in it with Gates. And Gates' stated aim is not just to vaccinate the world against coronavirus. Gates wants people in the near future not to be getting treated by your doctor for whatever. He wants people to be vaccinated against everything.
Yeah. Don't get in good health. Don't build your immune system.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, by the way, I have an honorary doctorate from the National University of Health Sciences for the work I've done in integrative and complementary medicine. And I, the first book I worked on, it wasn't my book, but I worked on it, was called Natural Healing back in 1985 when people weren't even talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't need a clown boy or girl. Look at the guy. Oh, girl guy. Google it up, everybody. Rachel Levin, L-E-V-I-N-E. This is the new U.S. Health Secretary.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy is now, it's Rachel. It used to be Robert or Richard or Dick. Yeah. I know Dick anymore. It's Rachel now. I forgot. Anyway, they're the ones, this guy got more chins than Chinatown. Yeah. The guy looks like hell. A woman, excuse me. And telling me what to do? How about go screw yourself? Anyway, here's the prostitute, this little boy, this Scarborough on MSNBC. How about NBC?
Yeah.
Yesterday, anybody that gets the vaccination, quote, that isn't vaccinated, quote, they're being stupid. They're following conspiracy theories. They don't understand. Maybe they're such morons. If they don't want to take the vaccine and they want to die, that's their right as Americans. They can live in ignorance and stupidity. Our government, our sports teams, our concert promoters damn well better put together something where you can show your vaccine receipt. This anti-science idiocy, you know, let them do that under a rock or in the caves. The time to try to reason with these people is long past. You come over here and talk to me like that, you little bastard. Come over here. Who the hell are you talking to?
Tough guy on his news network, yeah.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I know how to read. I know how to think for myself. Hey, you like that AstraZeneca vaccine? Maybe I got it. Maybe this guy's been blood clotted already.
Let me ask you about that AstraZeneca vaccine. I put an article on my own website today about the great possibility. In fact, I believe it's happening, that a lot of people receiving that vaccine are dying. In Scotland, Public Health Scotland answered a Freedom of Information request and said that up until February 26th, now bear in mind, they only began giving the AstraZeneca vaccine to people shortly before Christmas. So until February 26th, 2,207 people died within 28 days of getting a vaccine. Yep. So people are dying.
I mean, look, this is why I'm so angry. They're going to do this every year. They're going to do this every year. It's the new flu vaccine. Here, this is a story just came out. Over 100 fully vaccinated people contract COVID-19 in Washington. State officials said, fully vaccinated, you still got the thing. And you don't know what it's going to do to you long term. All right? And now they're going to tell us, all right, even if you're vaccinated, you still got to stay masked up. You still got to be, they're making this crap up. These are sick people. They're destroying our lives. This is a fight for freedom. Bottom line, there's no way in the world I will never get on a plane again if I have to get vaccinated. I will not get vaccinated. No one will make me get vaccinated.
And that's definitely coming in. This is the problem, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And you know who I feel sorry for, Gerald? By the way, trendsresearch.com, folks. You're listening to Gerald Celente, my friend and colleague from Kingston in New York City, New York State, I should say, the publisher of the amazing Trends Journal. You see, I've got a beautiful woman by my side. She's French and she understands what's going on. No intention of taking the vaccine. But she's got family in the northeast of France. And this is why I describe this as evil incarnate. She needs to see her mum, their small family. Her mum's in her 70s. And they're going to tell her, you can't travel to see your mum. unless you have the vaccine.
That's right.
And how difficult is it going to be for people that are wide awake to what's going on, but they're in a similar situation to my missus, to my better half? It's evil. It's unimaginably evil, this, isn't it?
It is.
What do you do?
This is, it's, how could anybody, how could they force this? All right, go back to the covers of the Trends Journal last week. Not the one that was here, not this week, the one before that. And look at the cover. You go to trendsjournal.com, and the cover is a vaccinations, again, another Anthony Frieda work of art, going into the world, and the world has eyes and a sad smile. One of the vaccines going in says vaccine. The other vaccine says money. And it says drug dealers and money junkies save the world. That's who's running the show.
Yeah.
Drug dealers. They're drug dealers. Drug dealers will do anything to sell their drugs. Got it? Got it, everybody?
You'll remember.
And money junkies. They're addicted. The people on Wall Street are addicts. They're money junkies. When I was a young guy, there were no hedge funds. There were no private equity groups. The bigs have taken over everything. That's the other part of this. By the way, we have a whole section in each Trends Journal on technocracy about how they're taking over. They're wiping out all the small businesses. Oh, Walmart, that's essential. Costco's essential. Target's essential. You're not essential. You're a little piece of crap.
Let me ask you one more question on this vaccine passport nonsense. It's a two-part question. One, Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida said, no way, Jose, not coming in here. It's discriminatory and it's wrong and it breaches people's privacy and human rights. That's what he said. I hope he means it. I also hope he checks under the hood of his car every time he starts the car, starts the ignition. But give us a comment on him. But also, you have Krispy Kreme saying, come and get, show us you're vaccinated and we'll give you a free donut. Will it be the private sector? You see, Joe Biden has allegedly said, or at least his press people have said, the government doesn't want to introduce vaccine passports. Let the private sector do it. So two questions. One, is it positive that Ron DeSantis is saying what he's saying? And two, if all of this stuff eventually comes to reality, will it be private businesses running it?
The private businesses are running it. You mentioned the passport that they have in, I love it, the name that they give it, the Excelsior passport.
Yeah.
It's being run by IBM.
Yeah.
They want to do this. They even quote this little clown from IBM saying how he wouldn't get on a plane. You know, this is the guy that's doing the business there. No, it's not only DeSantis. There are other states as well. And where people are coming out. I've been talking about this in the Trends Journal now going on for months, that there's going to be anti-vax, anti-tax, anti-immigration, and anti-establishment parties. So we're going to start seeing this happen. We're going to start seeing anti-vax movements. There's a large segment of society. Again, you look at the covers of the magazine. You go back before this one, two back, The Wizard of COVID. Who's behind the curtain?
Yeah, it's Billy. You know,
so
yeah.
They're going to do, it's a fight for our freedom. It's in front of our eyes. And again, this whole equity markets, they're going to crash. When the equity markets crash, the reality of the destruction that they've caused by locking down the global economy is going to be in front of everybody's eyes. It's being hidden now. It's being hidden now with the money they're dumping into the system to artificially prop it up and to keep the money junkies on their high. The homicide rates are skyrocketing in America, in the big cities. That's why they're flooding out of New York, out of San Francisco. That's why they're leaving the big cities. It's not safe anymore. Homeless, this is important. The homeless are everywhere. Everywhere. Except you know where? In the hospitals dying of COVID. Hey, how come? How come?
They're trying to get them.
Because.
Go on.
Their immune systems are built up. They live in dirt and filth. And now they're telling everybody to sanitize your hands. Oh, by the way, there's an article in this Trends Journal, been in other ones as well, as how deadly these sanitizers are, so many of them, with the chemicals and benzene in them. So why aren't the homeless dying? Totally ignored. Again, the people that are dying have 2.6 pre-existing comorbidities. These are facts. The recovery rate from people 1 to 24 years old, 1 to 20, is 99.997%.
That's right.
Overall, it's 99.7%. What the hell you locking it up for? You're going to die at some point in your life. No, you're not, Salenti. Get a vaccination. Oh, better yet, buy this drug. Feeling down? This will get you back up. Oh, and by the way, here are the side effects. Oh, and that guy Whitney, he got the side effects. His penis shrunk because he's a little wanker.
And I don't believe for a minute that Whitty or Valance or Johnson or any of them actually took the vaccine.
No, I don't either.
I don't buy it. Trendsjournal.com, trendsresearch.com or trendsjournal.com. Folks, let me tell you, a subscription to the journal for 12 months is about £100. You're getting, for less than £2, you're getting 52 magazines a year. It's terrific. I recommend it. I'm lucky enough that they give it to me complimentary so that I can read it in advance of chatting with Gerald. Trendsresearch.com, trendsjournal.com. We'll speak again next month, my friend. Sorry for keeping you a bit longer than we agreed.
I know you're busy. Do you have 1 minute here?
Always for you, always.
Okay. This is from the Jerusalem Post. All right? So don't call me an anti-Semite when I read this. Anybody listening? I'm tired of putting these labels. Good, bad, comes in black, white, green, yellow, any gender, male, female. I'm tired of all this crap. Anyway, vaccine passports are being compared to Yellow Star of David.
That's right.
Political activists are comparing the idea of a vaccine passport to Nazi Germany, with many invoking the Yellow Star of David that Nazis forced Jews to wear during the Holocaust. These are people from Israel.
Yeah. Did you ever imagine?
That's what it is, everybody. All aboard. Next train to Auschwitz. And put on your mask.
We'll speak again in a month. Great to have you back, Gerald. Thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you do and bringing out the truth. God bless you.
Thanks.
And everyone listening.
Thanks, Gerald. You've been listening to the brilliant Gerald Salente live from Kingston in New York State. Trendsjournal.com, trendsresearch.com. And of course, Gerald will be back on the programme in a few weeks' time in April. No doubt about that. Thanks to him again. Lots of tweets on that. Thanks for them. To see what people are tweeting me, by the way, I haven't said this for a while, but if you want to engage with people listening to the programme, my Twitter handle is BBGRichie. So if you leave out the at bit and just put BBGRichie where it says search Twitter, and if you press enter, you'll see what people are tweeting me and you can get involved. You can have a chat with them. And I've written about this extensively on the newish website. It's newish, isn't it? It's newish. They are developing vaccines for everything. You might remember, if you've been with me for a long time, if you've been listening for a long time, I do a monologue, don't I? I do a monologue. And I play lots of clips in that monologue from news programmes. And the woman who leads the MHRA, which is the regulatory body for medicines in England, is June Rain. She's also worked on research that was funded by Bill Gates before she became the head of the MHRA. Right, okay. And she's been telling anybody who will listen for some time now that in the future we are going to move into a new era of medicine, a new era of prevention. Now you might think, we've heard this before over the years. They've talked about prevention being better than the cure. Yes, they have. That's a cliche. But now they mean it. And what they mean by that is they mean vaccines. They mean not waiting by not waiting us, me and you, not waiting until we feel a bit unwell. This is how medicine has worked since Moses was in short trousers. You feel a bit unwell and you either go to the pharmacy because you know that you might need a painkiller, or you might need this or you might need that. Or you go to a doctor who evaluates you and prescribes something for you. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but that's the way we've done it since Moses was in short trousers. Right, okay. I was lucky to have a family doctor who didn't prescribe antibiotics, who said you'll be all right tomorrow. And if you're not all right tomorrow, you'll be all right by Wednesday. Get out and about, get a bit of fresh air, open the windows, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, that morphed into prescription drugs, big pharma. That's the way it's been. But they want to move away from that. They want to move into a new era of prevention. And vaccines are in development already for things like allergies. Allergies. For diabetes, for Alzheimer's, for dementia. I could be here all day long listing these vaccine development programs. That's where we're going. And I believe that taking those vaccines will be tied into how you do in your life, how you do in society. The social credit model. You know? Take a vaccine for diabetes. Well, I'm actually 6'6" tall. I weigh 13 stone 12 pounds. I'm in remarkably brilliant shape for a 46-year-old baldy gammon. There's no chance I'm going to contract diabetes. I don't want your vaccine. Well, but we think you should have it. We think you should have it. Because if you don't, you might be wrong. You might get diabetes and you might put unnecessary strain on the health service. They're going to have vaccines for obesity. Can you imagine, I wrote this on the website the other day, what the vaccination schedule will eventually look like for young children. It's horrendous already. As far as I understand, children in the UK, by the time they are six, are expected to have had at least 12 jabs. Now, I know some of you will start shouting at me on Twitter and you'll probably say it's more. You'll probably say it's more like 15 or 16, Richie. By the time they're 5, 6, 7 or 8. They want children to have vaccines for stupid things. They want boys to have the human papillomavirus vaccine. Girls don't need to have it. For obvious reasons. Girls don't need to have it. I've gone through the statistics on special programs that I've done about how unlikely it is that you're going to get cervical cancer. So they're introducing all of these vaccines. And now they're separating people from their doctors. Right, we talked about this as well. Meeting your doctor face to face is going to be a thing of the past as well. This is another thing that's going to be kept on. You see, they talk about the pandemic and now they're talking about, well, what are the good things that have happened during the so-called pandemic? What are the things that we've learned that could be good for society? One of them is they want more and more and more telephone or Zoom consultations with your doctor to free up the NHS, to make things more practical. To make it possible for your doctor to see more people in a day than he or she previously did. As it stands, before coronavirus, you're lucky if your doctor spends 5 minutes with you. Not making it up. 5 minutes. You go and see a doctor now, it's unlikely they'll take your blood pressure. It's very unlikely they'll recommend a blood test. This is just before coronavirus now. No, they'll sit there. You'll go in and say, oh, I've got a bit of tightness in my chest. Your doctor is typing stuff into a computer. And that will spit out a prescription. That's how it was before the scamdemic, let's call it. It's going to be completely different going forward. Vaccines, and even more vaccines. They'll have a vaccine for everything. They will have a vaccine for hemorrhoids. Think I'm joking? They're already talking about it. Honest to God, can you imagine a world where you'll be pushed through an online consultation by a doctor who won't wait for you to initiate the contact, by the way. They will initiate the contact. So you're going about your life, going about your business, minding your own business, and you'll get pinged on an app on your smartphone. And your doctor will, you will open your app. And your doctor won't even be there. Your doctor will have made a 30-second film. That's how it's going to be. You're minding your own business. Ping! Oh, right, what's going on? Open your phone. There's a 30-second presentation from your local doctor, whom you've never met. I'll open it up anyway. They won't even address you by name. They'll tell you that they're worried about hemorrhoids. Look, I'm just using hemorrhoids as an example. Piles. And they'll say they've got a vaccine for that now. Why don't you book your vaccination? Come and book your vaccination. That's how it's going to be. Transhumanism. That's where it goes. Speaking with Dr. Tess Lowry the other night, I pissed off some of you because I said I didn't believe that there are nanoparticles in the COVID vaccines. I don't. But that doesn't mean that I don't believe that they plan to use those vaccines as delivery vehicles for nanotechnology. Of course I do. You know who I've interviewed and where I've been. Of course I think that's a possibility. I don't think it's happening right now. They want us talking about it now because they're not using it, I don't think, in the vaccines that are being pushed for COVID now, but they plan to use it in the future. Yes, of course. That's where we're going, folks, you know. I've never been paranoid in my life. I've never discussed or talked about anything on this programme or made statements unless I felt I could back them up. They've admitted this stuff. It's out there. You type experimental vaccines into a search engine. You type vaccines in development into a search engine and it will blow your mind. They're going to come up with vaccines for allergies. For dust allergies. Jesus! And people will take them. Listen, thanks so much to Stephen Lendman, to the amazing Gerald Salente, stephenlendman.org, trendsjournal.com. I'm back with you tomorrow, Thursday at 5 o'clock UK time, going out of the programme today with a song from Bruce Springsteen's album Western Stars, which was inspired by people like Glen Campbell and people like that. It's a song called Tucson Train, closing out today's programme. And enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. There might be sunshine still left out there for you. So go and enjoy it. And we'll do it again tomorrow. Bye for now.